Today is the 7th of July 2016. I'm interviewing Graham Ellery of Hastings. Graham is a retired promotions manager. Graham, would you like to tell us something about the life and times of your family, please?
Certainly. I was born in Greymouth, South Island, in 1937 to Mavis and Don Ellery. I was the eldest of the family, and we lived in Greymouth until 1952. That's when we came to the South Island. My father was a builder, as was his brother, and my grandfather, who I remember quite clearly, he was a bricklayer.
Where did they come from to Greymouth originally?
They came from Australia. Granddad, Dad's father, was a gold miner by profession and a bricklayer by necessity. And they came from Charters Towers. Granddad came over to chase the gold in the West Coast.
And had he become a builder at that stage?
No, Granddad was a bricklayer. Dad was a builder when he left school, did a carpentry course. And just touching on that, the person that was his woodwork teacher when he was at primary school was my woodwork teacher when I went to school.
Well, they didn't move very far, those days.
No.
So you always lived in Greymouth as a family?
Dad was a builder, and he worked for the Education Board, and so he would travel around, build schools. Mm. And we went from Greymouth when I was about 7 or 8, from Greymouth to Kakapotai, which is about 13 miles south of Ross. And we spent 6 months down there while Dad built the school, but that was the only time that we actually left Greymouth for any period of time.
So you and your brothers were all born in Greymouth?
That's right. It was myself, the eldest, and then my brother Raymond. He's 4 years younger, and then there was my sister Linda. And when I was my second year at high school at Greymouth, we shifted to the North Island, to Otani specifically.
That must have been quite a shift.
It was.
Those days, because you actually moved from a coastal town to a very small village, really, wasn't it?
That's right, Otani. Yes. And of course, there wasn't Otani only had a butcher shop and a baker's and a hotel, whereas in Greymouth we had the port and the sea, and it's a different lifestyle altogether. Mm.
Just coming back to Greymouth, Graham, what was it like growing up in Greymouth? Because you were there long enough to get a feel of it.
Yes, well, it was like any sort of smallish provincial area, town. Everyone knew everyone. You know, if you went somewhere and they say, oh, who was your father? What was his name? Mm. It was all a case of whānau, as we say.
Yes.
You know, everyone needed to associate you with someone they knew.
Yes, of course, if they could, then you're okay.
Yes, that's right. It wasn't what you knew, it was who you knew. And I found that quite, as you got older, that was quite a thing. Not so much today. I think people would go on a recommendation from someone that knew you.
Yes.
Whereas today they want documentation all the time.
Just coming back to Greymouth.
Greymouth was the port. Not that I can remember much about it. I know that I used to go down with my grandfather and we'd white bait by the wharf in Greymouth. There was coastal shipping, but at that age when I sort of started to know what was going on, at that age you're only interested in the weekends, school holidays and going away for holidays. Life was fairly confined to not a broad spectrum. Used to play at sport, of course, when I was at high school, but I only had 18 months at high school on the West Coast. Primary school was good. I enjoyed school. Always found that I'm always a challenge of some description.
Mm. So then when you came over to Hawke's Bay, was there a high school at Waipawa you would have had?
That's right, yes. Well, I went straight to Waipawa District High, which was at that stage was on the hill. And then we're only there 6 months, I think. And then they transferred the high school down to the primary school down the hill. But there was the old school on the hill, there was no grass. So if you played football, you had to go down to the football field.
So were any of the Bibbies in control of the school those days?
No.
No, they came later.
Yes. But Maloney was the headmaster at the time.
So did you carry on with your sport?
Yes. When I came to Hastings, when I started work in 1954 at Roaches, I played rugby football for Hastings High School Old Boys, because the man in charge of the men's department and boys' department, he was a coach. So consequently, I played for one season and ended up with a hematoma on the left thigh. And of course, in those days, there was no social security. So when I wasn't at work, I wasn't getting paid. So I decided that it was foolish to be an amateur sports person if you were going to have accidents. But then I used to do a bit of swimming. But when I started work at Roaches, I was full on and trying to carve out a career for my future. So all my effort and time went into honing my craft as a display artist. But I also had a bent for entertainment. And when I was in Greymouth at primary school, I put on a puppet show for Standard 5. And that was only for the class. But in the end, all the standards came into our room and we ended up giving a concert to the school. That was with the puppets, and that was little glove puppets which I made. And then I graduated from that to ventriloquism, so I made my first ventriloquist doll out of wood, and then was a Remu, I think it was as heavy as hell. And then I managed to get some Kaiwaka, which was a lighter wood, and made one out of that. And then from that, I made a paper mache one.
Now, just coming back to your window dressing, were you self-taught?
Well, the display and advertising manager at Roaches was a man called John Bailey, and he was my mentor and teacher. So you sort of started off dismantling the windows and putting the props away, vacuuming the floor and taking the pins out of the ceiling and all that sort of thing. And then that was at the beginning of the week, you'd do the windows, and then towards the end of the week, you were preparing for the next week's windows. Sure. The display manager always had a meeting with the manager, and they decided what was going to be advertised and what was going to be put in the windows.
At least in the shop window, if you want it, you only have to go through the door and buy it. But when you see it in the paper, there's a bit of effort required.
Yes, that's right. And it's difficult to convey some things with words. It's like when people used to say, you know, what are you going to do for the window? Well, it's very difficult to express in words what you're going to do in another medium, because you can't talk about the atmosphere you're going to create with a window, especially for Christmas with all the glitter and glamour and lights.
Yes.
It's easier to do it than to try and describe it in words. But learning the craft at Roaches was good, because we did everything. We made the props for the window. We decided how we were going to promote the particular thing. So it was for autumn, what props we'd use to create the autumn atmosphere in the windows. Then you'd find out what stock was going in, whether it was suits or frocks or fabrics or shoes. And then you devised your window and then went out and made the props to put the stock on or surround it to get the atmosphere. And then, of course, you had to, if the windows were successful and someone walked along the street, which was the whole idea of it, and they stopped and saw something they liked, they'd go in, and then that was right on 25 past five when you were knocking off at 5:30. So you had to strip a model and redress it before you went home.
Because that's the only frock you had.
Yeah, that's right. And it was a rule that you never left a model naked in the window. You know, if you took something out, and of course the staff were on death row if they went into a window and helped themselves, because they were often displayed in such a way that it required quite a bit of skill to undo all the pins in the cotton that was holding things up.
Yes, yes.
And then you could replace it. You had to be careful putting the garments on the models, because there were different sizes. It might be a size 16 frock and you had to put it on a size 12, which meant it all had to be pinned in carefully, and you had to be careful with the pinning that you didn't leave pin marks on the back of the frocks. It wasn't just dressing the window and making it look good. It had to be practical. You had to get the stuff out of the window for someone that wanted it. And the whole idea of putting things in the window was to sell them. So if someone came in and wanted something out at, you know, on the 11th hour before you knocked off, you had to make that effort to get it out carefully and hand it to the sales assistant so they could buy it, because that was the whole idea of putting it in the window, was to sell it. Although it was frustrating.
Because Rachel's had several departments, did you do anything with the grocery displays?
Yes, I did. They had a thing in the old shop. There was a window on the left of the one door and a window on the right. And I remember once putting in a display of canned tropical fruits. And I had a model. And one of the swimsuit firms had a promotion for a bikini. And it had a little grass skirt about 12 inches deep. And so I made a bra for the top and put this on, and I think I put pants on the model and then the skirt, and then put all of canned fruit and everything around and made it look like an island setting. I got a fan from, I don't know where I got it from, put that at the bottom, and the fan was an oscillating one and it blew, and of course it made the skirt move in the breeze. And the number of people, if you stood in the window and looked out, because it didn't have a back to the grocery windows, you could see the people coming along, and especially the men, with their eyes would turn to the right to see what was happening, because there was a glimpse of thigh every so often. So, no, that gave an opportunity to be a little bit more imaginative in the displays, as opposed to, you know, garments. Although I remember once I wanted something different in the windows, and I thought I'd like some stuffed animals, you know, taxidermy things. So they didn't have much in Napier, the museum there. So I contacted the Dominion Museum in Wellington and spoke to Dr. Feller, who ran it. And I took the firm's vehicle down, a Bedford delivery van down to Wellington, and loaded it up with the different stuffed animals and brought them back and put those in the window. Well, that caused quite a stir, because there was no place in Hawke's Bay that had any great display of taxidermy. You have to be innovative and just think outside the square. And of course, the other thing, ever since I was, as long as I can remember, if I set my mind to something, I stuck to it till I achieved it. Because I believe nothing's impossible if you set your mind to it.
No, well, there's no such word as noble counter.
No, that's right.
So those were the days of Miss Bott in the office?
Oh, yes. Poor old Nora. She was a very efficient office administrator. And I had a lot of time for Nora. Not that I called her Nora, it was always Miss Bott. She taught me a lot about writing business letters, because if you had to write a letter to a firm to inquire about something, you wrote it out in a book and you gave it to her, and she would then authorise one of her staff to type it. You'd go back to get it and it would be different. And she'd say, I've done it now. When you write a letter, you want to do this and do this. So when I look back now, I always think of Nora, because I got to know her a little bit better when I'd left, when she was well retired. I used to run across her when I was up in Parkvale. She lived around the corner from there, and I'd see her in the car, and we'd stop and have a bit of a chat about roaches.
Yes, because those days you had roaches, you had hunts across the road, and you sort of wandered your way down Beards and Westermans and Miller and Georgie's and Bon Marsh, and you sort of wonder. Our city was only half the size those days. And, of course, Blackmoors.
Well, you know, most people at Hastings, you know, worked either for Watty's Birdseye, Roaches or Westermans, or the Hawke's Bay Farmers. At some stage you had some connection with those firms. Being a small town and not that many sort of full-time display artists or window dressers, you know, you got to know them. And when Alan McCormick was at the Farmers, they'd never had anyone at Westermans, and a chap started there by the name of Paul Franco. And I made myself known to him and, you know, welcome to town, and that I was at the window dresser at Roaches and so on, and built up a long friendship over those
years.
That's
wonderful, yes.
And of course, Alan McCormick lived round the back of us in Murdoch Road. He was renowned for his floats and our Doughty. used to go around and play with his daughter, yes. Although she was much older.
So at what stage did you start becoming involved with the floats then? Were you married at that stage?
Yes.
Okay, yes, well, we better go back then and talk about when you met Rossi.
Yes. Well, I started work at Roach's in 1954, and I had 2 years at Roach's, and then because Dad's sister lived in Australia, I decided I'd go back with her because she came across on the boat. I think it was the Dominion Monarch or one of the boats. And so I just made a decision to go back with her in the February. So I went to Australia for 12 months and worked in a firm called Allen and Stark, which was a sort of the Kirkcaldys of Brisbane. It was David Jones and McWhirters, which later became Myers, and Allen and Starks. So after I had experience there, and incidentally, when I arrived in Brisbane, I stayed with relations, cousins, who I'd never met before. Then I went uptown the next day to apply for a job, but I spent the day walking around Brisbane City, and I went into Allen and Starks for a job. They didn't have anything, but the staff manager, Frank Coogan, was very good. He said, I'll talk to the manager. Now, there were 600 on the staff then. So then he said, oh, come back later. So I went down the road to David Jones. I went in there and told them who I was. And they said, oh, yes, we could probably fit you in. I said, oh, I'm just going down further. So I went down the valley, which was called the valley. It's still the valley. And went to McWhirter's. And they said, oh, no, you can start tomorrow. So I had virtually 3 jobs in about 4 hours. So I went back to Allen and Starks in the afternoon, and Frank said, I like you, he said. You're a nice young chap. And I said, oh, well, something's worked anyway. He said, our general manager had a lot to do with a New Zealander's during the war. Frank Weedman, his name was. So he said, I've organised for you to go and see him. So he took me up to Frank Weedman's office, which had a huge office for his secretary, and then he had a boardroom for his office. So we sat there and talked, and he said, oh, no, he said, I'd like you to have work for us. So he gets on the phone, and he phones up, and he said, Mr. Raisby, and he was the display manager, and then, would you come up to my office, Mr. Raisby? And of course, they ran. And then he rang up a Mr. Short, who was the advertising manager, and he had them both in the office with me and said, now, we want to give this young chap a job. He's got talent going by his references. Mr. Short couldn't fit me in the advertising, but Eddie Raisby said, oh, yes, I've got a vacancy. Well, I don't know if he did have a vacancy, but the way Mr. Weedman put it, he said, find a job for this young chap. Well, Mr. Weedman used to arrive by car, and there was a service lane between, it's now a Myers shop, but the service lane ran up between the two blocks, and he'd get out of his car and walk in the back of one of the Queen Street shop and go out, have a look at the windows, and then come back and go down Adelaide Street. And when I started work, he'd do that, you know, routinely every once a week or something like that, and if he ever saw me in the shop, he always stopped and said, you know, how are you getting on and are you enjoying it? So, you know, he took an interest in the staff, with a staff of, over 600. You know, I thought that was quite, and there was a lot of people that I've worked with since could take a leaf out of that book, remembering staff and asking how they are. So that was an experience. So I had nearly 12 months there, and then I came back to Hastings, and that was in 57. 56 I went over, 57 when I had to do my compulsory military training. So I had to register as soon as I landed back in the country, and then they sent me down to Tyree through the winter.
Well, that was probably better than Linton in the winter.
Yeah, that's right. So I had 3 months in the Air Force in Tyree, and I just got engaged after I came back from Australia. And my future wife worked at Roach's, so we go back to there. We started going out a little bit, so then we got engaged, and then I did my military training. And when I came back in the August, we made plans to get married in February, so we were married in 1958 on the 22nd of February.
So where did Rossi come from then?
She came from Paiatua, and she had a sister living in Hastings, and she boarded with her. And as I say, when we got engaged and after I came back from camp, Rossi decided to find another job because we didn't want to work in the same place. Mm. And she worked for Botts, the electrical, Esol washing machines and sewing machine.
So all her schooling was in Paiatua?
Yeah, that's right, yes. Well, she comes from a pioneering family the Wairarapa, because there's a street, her maiden name was Sedcole, and her great-grandfather was one of the founders of Paiatua. The flagpole in the main street put up in his honour, and her mother's side, which were Hercocks, were people that founded parts of Paiatua and gave land and property and things. So she came from a pioneering family of the Wairarapa.
So they were business people or farming people?
Farming.
Well, it probably would be farming people those days.
Yes.
Paiatua, because it wasn't a big, town.
No, it was a rural service town, wasn't it?
Yes. So then you came back, she was at Botts, and you were back at Roach's.
Yes. So we got married in February, say, 58, and we've been married since then, so it's 56-odd years. Yeah, 58 years, I think it is. So we're counting down the days to our 60th wedding anniversary.
And children?
We had two girls. Janine, we were married in 58. Janine was born in 1960. And then there was a 3-year gap to our other daughter. So only had the two girls. And my wife had cesarean, so we didn't try for a third because they didn't have the fancy surgery of bikini cuts in those days. So we've been very fortunate. The two girls have turned out to be wonderful mothers, and we're really blessed with our family.
Are they local?
No, one's living in Australia because her husband's family moved over there, so they went to Brisbane. It was rather strange because when we decided to go to Australia in 1972 with our two girls, just before they started school at intermediate, and being just down the road from Mum and Dad, they were terribly upset when we were taking the eldest grandchildren away. And then, of course, what happens to us? Our daughter had two children, one 6, I think, and 4, and they did the same thing, went to Australia. Wow. And my brother used to say, well, that's justice now. You did that to Mum and Dad, now it's happening to you. But they've been there and they've done well. They're still there. And our other daughter's husband got killed, so she had two children, a girl and a boy. And the girl's in Canada on a working holiday, and the grandson, he's working for a television production company in Taradale. Janine's family, our eldest one, her eldest boy, he's an engineer in Brisbane. And her daughter is now married. She went to university and met her husband. She became a marine biologist, and then she met up with a tutor and they got married and they went to England, and he was at Oxford and she came back, and then she did a course, and when they came back to Australia, I think they were over there for 12 months in England, she changed her career to a genetic counsellor. That's to do with having children and the different genetics that are attached with that. So he got a job with Monash in Melbourne, and he's over now in Lincoln. But he doesn't actually do any practical work. He's a sort of a fundraiser, and he's always touring around the world trying to raise money from different foundations. And they've bought a house in Christchurch now, and I think they're settled. So that's one granddaughter in Christchurch, a grandson in Brisbane, and one grandson in Hastings, and one granddaughter in Canada, Vancouver. She went to university, Victoria, and then she's having a gap year. Mm. But I think she'll be back in a couple of years' time.
Have you been to Vancouver?
No.
Have you ever had the opportunity, Graham? It's the most wonderful.
Yes, I've heard that.
Beautiful country. Vancouver was a beautiful city. Beautiful, beautiful city. Oh, so how long will she be there then?
Oh, well, she's got a 2-year visa. But her brother, the one that's with the television production, he's going over next year. Him and his mother will only stay, Tracy will only stay for 3 weeks holiday, and then I think he's going to stay and extend his training. And well, I think that's the idea of it, but it's early days yet. Mm.
Now, Graham, I'm just referring back to some things you were interested in, ventriloquism and magic.
Lightning cartooning.
It's mind-boggling. Also, the development and building of these beautiful big floats that we used to have in the Blossom Parade prior to the 1960 riots.
That's right, yes. It was a follow-on from display, I suppose, that I would perhaps do that. I used to do the blossom windows, and then I did a lot of freelance window dressing. And then I got John Mills was in charge of Parks and Reserves after Butcher. I think Butcher, he approached me once. No, I know what it was. I used to do the animated Christmas caves at Roach's with Wally Hastings. He was the electrician, and we'd get our heads together, and I'd make all the things up, and he'd help me animate them. There was a chap over the back of our place in Murdoch Road that was quite artistic, and so we got our heads together and we made up this animated with little dolls about 12 inches high called GJ's World, and we put it up underneath the Travelodge Motel when Kevin McGruddy had it. It wasn't permanent, it was there for 6 months or 12 months, and we'd charge people and they'd come on the weekend and have a look at it, and we'd have to sit up there. Anyway, Butcher was in charge of Parks and Reserves, and someone must have said something to him, and he decided he'd come and have a look. So the city council bought it from me and put it in to Fantasyland underneath the train track, the hill. I don't know if it's still there. I mean, it's not there, but I mean, I know that the hill's still there. Yes. The train went round the top. So we set it up in there, and as a result of that connection with the council, I got offered to, you know, did I want to build it? Well, it was John Mills that came to me and said, would I build a float for them? So I did that for about 4 years, 5 years, and I've got, you know, photographic evidence of all the things I did. When I worked at the Daily Telegraph, I did a few floats for the Napier City Council. Dave Prebenson, he came to me at the Telegraph and said, apparently you can build floats, so I built 2 or 3 floats for the Napier City Council for their Christmas parade. After I'd built, I'm just trying to think of the sequence of events, when I was at the Telegraph, I made these animated attractions which were 12 feet long in a big sort of case, and I used to hire those out to the shops. Hawke's Bay Farmers had them, and then they went to Palmerston, they went to New Plymouth, and I had a big trailer specially made and cart 2 of these around the country and hire those out. Well, when I did that, someone said, why don't you approach Rainbow's End in Auckland? So I took off and up there with a movie I'd done of it. And as a result of that, I got a contract with Rainbow's End to build the animated log flume ride for them at Manukau. And Craig Heatley was the man I dealt with, and he was the one that started Sky Television. This was when I was at the Telegraph, so I spent 18 months commuting back and forwards to Auckland and building this, and bought a caravan and lived in a caravan park and made them down here, and then shipped them up and put them together up there. So that was a real marathon. So as a result of starting off at Roach's, dressing windows and doing a little Christmas cave, I managed to secure a real challenge.
Now, somewhere in the middle of all of this, you carried on with your magic and...
Yes, I used to do a lot of entertaining around Hastings in the time when Howard Morrison was just I was actually listed just under Howard Morrison in one of the concerts. And they used to run Blossom Queen concerts at the Municipal Theatre. Yes. And Jack Jones and Jack Baxter were the two that used to run this. And then I used to say, and I used to entertain for 21st and concerts and things like that. And the doll I'd bought here in Hastings when I lived in Otani. But since then I've bought a real up-to-date one that winks and raises his eyebrows. But before, mine was just a simple mouth movement.
And you still have the doll?
Yes.
And you still do any?
No, but I hope to do a bit just coming up now. We've retired into here and sit down. And I've also got lots of puppets. I've got about 80 puppets stored out in the garage in containers, so I'm not short of things to do. And I find that fascinating, especially with children. The puppets are beautiful puppets. I got them from America. I saw them on...
These are glove puppets.
Yeah, the big ones. You know, they're not just little small yes. ones. So when people say, have you got... My wife says, you need an interest. It's just a case of time, but as I say, it's just shifting into a whole... Well, having a quarter acre section with an 800 square foot garage to work in, you know, studio, down to a townhouse, it's sort of restricted me a little bit. And it's 4 years since, you know, we came here, and I'm just starting to... And in between times, of course, when I left the Daily Telegraph, I started up the Chatham Island newspaper. So I had that for 10 or 12 years.
Well, that would have been interesting too.
Yes, yeah, so I went down a couple of times, and then it was all done through emails and faxes. And then a few years ago, I sold it to a friend of mine who was a journalist, and he took it and over.
Relating to your other arts of magic, that I think you said you haven't continued over the last few years.
I've done a little bit for... I got asked to go and entertain for a Probus group, and up to a few years ago I was doing a bit of entertaining for lodge functions when we had a social evening. But what I want to do is to do a bit of busking up in the main street. And yes. I've got a mobility scooter bought when I had my hips done because I couldn't drive for a while, so I thought I could pack the back of that with the puppets and go up and sit up by the fountain
yes.
and entertain, because people don't see that today. They don't see those puppets and ventriloquism and things. Mm. So it's a whole new avenue for entertainment. See, television killed a lot of the yes. theatre work.
Yes, the puppets almost came alive, didn't they, with their stories?
Yes. But that's my plan, to do a bit of busking. Get out and meet people and entertain the kids, but, you know, I won't be picking a cold winter's day, that's for sure.
And so what other interests do you play? Any
No, I don't. No, I've never been since I gave up football, I've never had any trouble entertaining myself and having something to do. I played a bit of indoor bowls a couple of years ago, but I didn't want to be committed to playing every week. And I've never been on a golf course in my life. Golf doesn't interest me in the slightest. Maybe bowls might, but I don't really need to worry about that. And now that I'm really retired and my back's a bit sore, I find quite happy to sit down and read, which I never had time to do before. I always felt guilty. I got a book and sat down when there was so much to do, you know, a quarter acre section, and I was always wanting to create new animated displays. Mm. So I say I've never been bored.
Well, that's wonderful. Talk to some people and they've reached 65 years old and it's almost as if they've switched everything off.
Well, you know, a couple of years ago, I was talking to Peach from the Community Arts, and I managed to do some displays for him for around the streets, big artificial blossoms. But they put them up 1 year and never put them up the next. So I've given up chasing them. It was a paid job, and it was quite good. It actually paid for my new armchair. Yes. So that was just a means to an end.
And does Rossi have any other interests?
No, she likes playing cards with her girlfriends. They have that once a fortnight. They play cards and then they play rummy come another week. And then she does, because she's so small and can't buy clothes to suit her, she does a lot of dressmaking and knitting.
Mm.
She knits a lot of prem babies.
Okay.
So she got a nice letter from the hospital thanking her for all the work she'd done. So she always seems to have something to do, especially with the sewing.
Well, it certainly sounds as if you, as long as you keep letting your mind run free and do these things, you've got plenty to do in your retirement.
Yes.
Is there anything else that we need to talk about?
No.
I see this lovely... Is that a Daimler you've got?
Yes, yes. That belonged originally to Duncan. Chap Duncan had had Suvik Engineering in Napier. An old chap. Well, he was old.
Mm.
And then he sold it to Fred Lyley, and I bought it from Fred Lyley before he died. But unfortunately, it was all right when we were in Murdoch Road because it was in a garage. And, of course, since it's 4 years out there and the paintwork's just deteriorated quickly, it wasn't perfect. before, but it was pretty good. But now you can see bare patches.
It's getting skinny.
Yeah, getting very skinny, and you can't polish it because there's nothing to polish. No. It's very good. We went round the South Island in it a couple of years ago. It's pleasant to drive. There's no comparison.
No, there isn't. All right, well, if that's about it, then I'd just like to say thank you, Graham, for allowing us to interview your life, and thank you very much.
That's a pleasure.